It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Sosi. Show is available as a podcast, it's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog which is still existing.
Yep.
And you can read old stuff at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Voice you just heard is Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
And for the first time in, what, a month?
Something like that.
Film
Maybe
Sociology is now back in full working strength. Big shout out and thanks to Sam Wattemeyer for filling for me while I was in hell, theatrical hell. Because the play was
set
in hell. But I'm done, and I'm back, and it's good to be back. So, lots going. It's chock full of film information here. So much so, I don't think we will have time for sports or food information on Film Sociology.
that regular listeners have become accustomed to hearing.
Whether they like it or not. So, although I do want to say a big shout out to everybody that was here last night for the screening of Mother Night. They are doing another event this evening at the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library. Just ask the librarian. And we had Bob Whitey, who is the producer and screenwriter of the film, on last night, and I got to do a Q&A with him. I'm hoping we get the audio for that and play it on a very near Film Sociology. It was a lot of fun. So anyway, there's an event happening now, or at 6 o'clock at the library, as far as some of the memorabilia, some of the props that are in the film are going to be on display. I don't know if Nick Nolte's smokes will be there, but you can go anyway. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's a real library. It's terrific, just like the show. All right. Kobe, I was thinking of you this week. So do I start with the film set in England in World War One, or do we start with Ant-Man? I will start with Ant-Man. I just have to bring up, also, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you know Kobe's love of period piece English films that his wife definitely wants to see, him not so much. Mm-mm. So when I was talking about that particular film, I said I thought of your wife with this film. And he goes, why? Well, it's set in England right at the beginning of World War One. He's like, nope.
Yeah.
Nope. I barely got the E in one. And he's like, nope, no thanks. Don't need that.
Don't
but she will see it with her mom, probably. It'll be a good one. So Ant-Man, are you interested, sir?
No, not
really.
Really?
You're a Paul Rudd guy, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I like Paul Rudd. I'm glad to see that he's like, you know, he's getting a big release superhero
and
movie.
A big check.
Yeah.
No?
No, don't.
Are you a superhero movie guy?
Kinda, yeah, but I don't. I mean, I think I forget who
he's
was
so
telling
committed.
Me. I think Joe. I think it was Joe Shear. I forget who.
Joe definitely.
That was telling. I was like, I think I asked him about Ant-Man. He's like, oh yeah, Ant-Man. Oh yeah, he's also Giant Man, and went on with the whole, you know, backstory and everything.
And it's also an art film.
It is also an art film. Ant-Man, art film.
No.
And
just didn't.
I don't know. Not really.
Wow. No. Well, it's the latest from Marvel. And Paul Rudd plays a thief just out of jail, trying to reconcile with his ex-wife and his daughter, current daughter, and becomes a part of an experiment with
where he's an ant.
Yes, where he is working with not Mad, but a scientist, Michael Douglas. Good to see Michael up and walking around today, this week. But yeah, it's an outfit that shrinks him down to ant size, and because of the and have super.
Oh, the outfit does that.
Yes.
Okay.
He's able to shrink down to that size, and of course, as you know, or you if you don't, you'll find out from this film is that you know ants have a tremendous amount of strength for being ants. So
that's what I was wondering. Does he have? Well,
yes. Okay. No, I think you're intrigued. So,
but does he? Does he have? He has regular human strength. Only he's ant sized.
And because he's ant size and the strength is already.
Okay.
So it's like superhuman ant size strength.
Okay.
So I know the other question is, of course, do you have to know all the other Marvel? No, you don't. There is a cameo from somebody involved with the Avengers, but you don't need to follow.
Is it Robert Downey Jr.?
I'm not telling you.
It's Robert Downey Jr.
No, I'm not telling you. But you don't need to know all of that. You don't need to sit down and watch all 27 films in order to appreciate Ant-Man. It's kind of the same outside vein as Guardians of the Galaxy. Did you see Guardians?
Mm-mm.
No.
Nope.
That's
didn't
not
see
your...
Guardians.
Okay.
Heard a million good things about it.
Yeah,
just haven't seen it.
It's good, lightweight fun, as is Ant-Man. It's not as good as Guardians of the Galaxy, if you must compare. But... But Paul Rudd is solid. Michael Douglas is good. Michael Peña gets to do some comedic relief, which is which I don't see often enough. And saw it in 3D. Not needed in 3D, of course. 99% of the time, I'm just going to say, not needed in 3D. I'll let you know when something is needed in 3D.
Oh, okay.
you personally, I will tell you. But it is lightweight fun. And I enjoyed it. So there.
Now that was a good movie.
It was a good movie. Also a good movie, not a great movie, Testament of Youth. This is the one that I was trying to bring.
It's flawed.
It's. I have not said flawed yet on the show, besides right now. But it's a woman in World War I England who, very independent, wants to go to Oxford, does not just want to wait and be married. And as her brother... Her fiance, and of course they don't quite get along right away, but they eventually do. And her friends go to war, and it becomes about a story of a woman that wants to be more than just a woman or just a wife, and then she wants to later be more than just a writer, and she becomes a nurse during World War I. And I'm embarrassed. This is apparently based on a huge book in England. The first half of it is what Kobe dreads. It is very masterpiece, Downton Abbey, or as we kind of lump it as Edwardian era stuff. Ask us on the street sometime. And it is a little on the dry side. The second half, when it involves her.
Oh, really?
I will find a British period piece that is bubbly and lush.
I doubt it.
So still don't watch.
You know. You know
still
what?
Don't watch
you Downton. Do that.
I will.
You do
I will
that.
Find one, and then I will show it to you, and we'll see. But the second half of the film, when she is involved as being a nurse and finding out what happened to her to the people that she cares for, that kicks it up a little bit more. The lead performance should be noted. Solid performance, but I hope I'm saying this right. It's a Swedish actress, Alicia Vikander. And I had a mini Alicia festival this week and did not know it, which I will get to in a little. Because I watched Testament of Youth on Monday and liked it. And then the next day, I find out, because I rented it, but she is the alien intelligence in Ex Machina, which just came out on DVD this week. So I'm already jumping ahead to the video store. Not yet, but... I kept going, and that was also a good performance. I'm like, oh, hey, it's the same person. That's cool. Who knew? So also, when you have a film like this, and so she's the lead, Kit Harington, for you fans of Game of Thrones, and is in this as well as the fiance. And when you have a British period piece like this with young people, you must surround them with older name actors, like Miranda Richardson, who plays a strict schoolmaster, but she's got a little little glint in her eye as far as compassion. And of course, her parents are played by Emily Watson and Dominic West. So, young up and coming actors surrounded by experienced actors in your favorite genre that your wife is going to love. So there. Anyway, also a good film. Go check it out.
Oh,
did you?
I closed out of it here.
Now that was a good movie.
There we go.
Okay. Also in theaters, also something I was going to tell your wife to go see, Mr. Holmes.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
You're intrigued?
No, I'm not personally. But you were talking about this earlier this week.
Yeah, I actually just got back from it this morning. It's Bill Condon, of course, who gave us Kinsey and Chicago, Dreamgirls. And it's Ian McKellen, who's going to be on Fresh Air Monday. So tune in and listen to that. That will be a fun conversation. But he plays an aging Sherlock Holmes, who is living out in the country. He has a woman that works for him, played by Laura Linney, and a young son who's he's starting to take under his wing. And Holmes is near the end of his life, and senility is starting to kick in, and he's still trying to remember an old case that he had not solved. So there's three elements going on with this film. It is him remembering this case of a woman who may or may not be faithful to her husband, a trip that he took to Japan before senility really kicked in, and then being around the house. It's intriguing to see as spry a person as Sir Ian McKellen play somebody who's starting to crumble. And I think that's it. Don't expect a Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes in this one. This is not Guy Ritchie. But it is a quaint performance all around, and it's a nice picture. And I'm kind of surprised it's being released in summer. This seems like something that would be pushed maybe a little more into grown-up movie season, but I guess we need an alternative to Ant-Man. And Testament of Youth apparently was not enough. So anyway, also pretty solid work from the acting department, because it's college. And beautiful, I think it's Wales, but beautiful countryside footage. It's the type of place, Kobe, you know, that Bianca wants to stand at the edge and look out at the crashing sea, being held by her love. Mm. That would be you. So there, Lord and Lady. Apparently it's just
and then there's Trainwreck,
and yeah, that's the one film I missed. It's Amy Schuster, who's starring and did the screenplay, and directed by Judd Apatow. I heard David Edelstein's review of it. He basically said it was flawed.
Okay,
basically. And then also new in theaters that I got to see is it's a film called Aloft with Jennifer Connelly and Cillian Murphy. As well as Melanie Laurent, who you'll know, Kobe, as the woman who works in the movie theater in Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, man, I'm looking at this here.
You're looking at what, the info for Aloft?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's shot in Manitoba in the bleak, bleak, flat, cold lands of Manitoba.
I don't remember her.
You don't remember her?
No, I haven't seen it in a while, though.
Ah, killing Nazis. Which my daughter still quotes. But it's parallel stories between, and we're not really sure if it's set in the future or isn't it, or just because it's out in bleak Manitoba, it's just timeless. But we have a woman who apparently has healing powers, and then we have a parallel story of the son she abandoned. And boy, you think those two stories are going to get together eventually?
Nuh-uh.
Oh, I'm serious. But it's hard to tell. The way the story is presented is pretty murky, and it's a downer of a picture and not a lot of fun. So and even though you have good actors in it, it was a bit of a chore to sit through. So I think you can avoid that one. Okay. And Kobe, you already have.
Yeah,
I know you have. That's a shame. Anyway, Kobe.
Yes.
Now, your alma mater, of course, is not until August.
We're on break.
You're just chilling.
Yeah.
This is the time I really like it because it's real quiet before all the little kids show up again.
Freaking sucks.
And of course, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, Indie Film Fest is happening through July 25th.
Going on right stat now.
Right now. Right darn now. And if you're listening to the show, thank you. And then go to the Indie Film Fest.
Yep.
Anyway, indiefilmfest.org for screenings and information. So go check that out. Kobe, what's happening on your screen?
Well, Midnight Movies continues.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Back to the Future 2 at Keystone Landmark.
And just to be clear, everybody keeps asking why. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people have asked, why are they showing part 2? Because of the timeline. Because there is a 2015 joke in the film, which happened back in the late 80s. So that's why.
So there's that.
Yeah, there's that.
Also, at the IMA tonight, their Summer Nights series, Shaun of the Dead.
You've not seen Shaun of the Dead.
I've seen Shaun of the Dead.
See, that's sort of scary but funny.
Yeah.
And because of that film, I didn't need zombie movies for a decade.
No, really don't.
Really like it. And for my money, best use of the music of Queen in a film ever.
It's been a while.
Don't Can't stop remember. Me now while they're beating the zombie in time to the song. Yes, that's a bold statement here at Film Sociology. Best use of Queen in a film, period.
Let's hand out the award.
Award drop.
For the best use of Queen in a film.
You know Brian May would pick up that award.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's all about it. Still wishing he could be in Mad Max Fury Road. No.
So that's going on at the IMA. Keystone Landmark has Back to the Future 2 this weekend, and then they're closing out their Midnight Movie Summer Series next weekend with Goldfinger.
Really excited. I think we're going to go Friday night.
I might be there Friday as well.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Film Sociology trip.
Then, here we go. Drive-in. Tibbs.
Yep.
Ant-Man and Jurassic World.
Sure. Two action films.
Trainwreck and Ted 2.
Yeah, raunchy humor, sure.
Yep.
Already got it.
Minions and Inside Out.
Animated, fine, yeah.
And here we go. This is a weird combination.
What do you got?
The Gallows and Magic Mike XXL.
What?
Yep.
What? What? Isn't there another, well, it's like there's no other male stripper movie, but I'm like, isn't there another thriller you could tag on to that? That's one for him, one for her. Her, I guess, but not, that's weird.
Yep.
No.
At the Skyline.
Mm-hmm.
Inside Out. Well, sorry. Start. Minions.
Yep.
Inside Out.
Sure.
Looks like we have Max on another screen.
Wow, that's still... Okay. I don't know anybody who's seen that. Dog movie, right?
Yes.
Yes.
We got a whole lot of things going on here.
They have live music over.
The Falconer, Sport of Kings. Oh, wait, that was earlier this week. Sorry. 1:15 a.m. Saturday morning.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. The Late Late Show.
From 1939.
Ooh.
Take a guess.
Gone with the Wind. I don't know.
Nope. Gulliver's Travels.
Oh. Wow. Okay, so not just 70s grindhouse horror exploitation movies. Well,
not
cool.
Just that.
Good for them.
So that's what's going on there.
Alrighty.
Historic Art Craft. Looks like next week coming up we have Ferris Bueller.
I need to watch that again. I'm now... It's funny. I'm now getting chewed out wonderfully by my family because of films we don't own. They choose not to celebrate the films I do own instead poke fun of me for the films I do not.
Do you not own Ferris Bueller?
I do not. I do not.
Oh, wow.
You know,
in that huge collection you have, you do not own Ferris Bueller's Day
Off. I've got around to it.
That's, oh.
See,
I feel like.
You're one of them.
I feel like that's a.
A must have.
Yeah, it's a
necessity.
A must, that's a, yeah.
Huh. You know, I
that should be automatic, Matt.
thanks, Emma. Jerk. That's great. Thank you. Thank you, Louise. That's very helpful. I need to watch that again. I remember somebody wrote, and I brought this up a long time ago, but the now that I'm older, can I look at it from a teen's point of view, or do I look at it from a parent's point of view?
Mm.
Somebody made the claim that now that they're in their 40s and they watch it, he's obnoxious. This is obnoxious. So I need to watch it and see if that's true.
Hmm.
When was the last time you watched it?
I don't know. It might have been, it's probably been at least a year.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been longer for me. Okay. So there's that.
Interesting, though.
So, yeah. Well, I the other one I have is, and I just bought this on Blu-ray. By the way, there's a particular book chain that's still around. And there, you know the one. It's it rhymes with Harms and Hobel. But their Criterion DVD and Blu-rays are 50% off. So,
cool.
I picked up The Big Chill. Have you ever seen The Big Chill?
Nope.
1983. I saw that in the theater with my parents. And, of course, it's college friends who, by the way, attended the University of Michigan. And for a while, there was a class at University of Michigan about The Big Chill.
Really?
Yes. Well, IU has its own barrage of cool classes. You went to a few of those.
I don't know if there's one like that. Just about breaking away, though.
That would be cool. We should go down to the.
Yeah, we'll see what you're talking
about.
We
should go to the dean and pitch that. hey, dean, got a class for you. Check this out.
I'll teach it. Feel me out.
And then we'll get Dennis Christopher on Skype.
See, you're talking about an entire class based on one movie, though.
Well, that's been done, I'm sure.
Apparently at the University of Michigan.
And, of course, Dr. Slagle would love to do one on Gone with the Wind.
Oh, God.
Before I bust you.
Okay, see all this, the intermission and the overture? We're skipping that. You don't need that. We're skipping that.
Oh, you're teaching the class. So I imagine Bianca, you know, hair up, glasses, and as she's doing the lecture, and you're standing behind her, just shaking your head like, no, no, you don't need this, no, terrible, no, poor. Yes, she's terrible. Move on.
Yeah.
Yes, he's a brute. Move on. Yeah, Civil War, bad. Yeah, don't know nothing about birth and babies. Got it. Yeah. Honey, I could teach this class in a week.
Finals in late April. See you then.
Show up.
Yeah.
On an academic episode of I Love You, Your Team Sucks, Bianca wants to teach Gone with the Wind. Kobe's not helping. Tune in Thursday. Sorry, inside jokes. Anyway, Kobe, I have an imaginary sitcom starring Kobe and Bianca, and it's called I Love You, Your Team Sucks. And I, of course, play the wacky neighbor who's not helping sitcom husband with his chicanery and at times makes things worse.
I'm looking here at the list of the remaining Summer Night film series at the IMA.
Yes.
A lot of cool stuff coming. Shaun of the Dead this week. Yep. Elf next weekend.
Sure, Christmas in July.
Yeah. Major League ending July.
Rene Russo.
And then we have the
Final
Four.
Yeah, which
that
were? I remember because we had a major bracket breakdowns here at Film Sociology.
That was fun. Singing in the Rain.
Oh, you're there.
Big Lebowski.
We're there.
Shining.
You won't be there.
And Ferris Bueller.
Oh, so another chance to see Ferris Bueller.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Artcraft. Artcraft versus IMA.
Ring the bell.
Ding. 15 rounds. Oh, so going back to what I was saying about The Big Chill, it's a group of college friends who have a reunion because of a death of their classmate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, at this time, up-and-coming film actors. They were already, some of them were already known or, they were established in theater, but Kevin Kline, Glenn Close, Joe Beth Williams, Jeff Goldblum, William Hurt. Hurt was the big name. Tom Berenger, Mary Kay Place, Meg Tilly. And it's a weekend of them being together. And you know, obviously their lives have all gone in different directions, and sometimes they mesh and sometimes they don't. And I remember this film, it resonated with me as much as it could with a 13-year-old, and I think part of it was seeing grown-ups that vulnerable, to open up that much to each other, the kind of, what have we done?
Mm.
What have we done with ourselves? And that's where the title comes from, is this, you know, the fact that you leave college with, you know, a fire in your belly, the fire and the passion. And then after a while, it just kind of goes away. So the film is also known because the Alex, the character who kills himself, the reason why they're all there, his scenes were cut from the film, and it was a young Kevin Costner whose scenes were cut.
Oh.
And that led to, I think part of it was a kind of a consolation prize, to speak, but that's how he got involved with Silverado. And that started his
interesting
his rise to fame. But anyway, I started watching The Big Chill every 5 years, and to see where my head is as a person and how I would relate to these characters under these circumstances. And so now that, and I can't remember the last time I watched it. So now that I have the Blu-ray, I will probably sit down and watch it at age 45. But I also remember attending the funeral of one of my professors at Ball State when I was 24, and then watching it afterwards. And because your own life experiences, you think about it differently when you're watching that film. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of art, is that it can change over time, as you change over time.
Sure.
Some other midnight movie stuff. They announced the October midnight movie series at Landmark Keystone Arts. Some Kobe will be at, others will not. But October 2nd and 3rd, the warped David Cronenberg film Videodrome with James Woods and Deborah Harry. It's messed up in a cool way. Criterion has it on DVD and Blu-ray, which you can get half off. But yeah, it's pretty warped. Famous scene for having a videotape pulled out of his belly, among other things. October 9th and 10th, the 1986 musical version of Little Shop of Horrors, which you and Bianca said have not seen.
Nope.
It is loved in our house. I think that will be the one that we go to, definitely. So be on the lookout for that. October 16th and 17th, the Todd Browning film Freaks, from the director of Dracula, about a group of circus freaks and what happens when a quote-unquote regular human being goes into their fold. Famous last lines in the film, one of us, one of us. October 23rd and 24th, the John Landis film, American Werewolf in London. Not seeing that either.
Nope.
Really cool special effects from Rick Baker. I believe he won an Oscar for that one. And just enough humor to move along with some of the scares. So that's pretty cool. And then I'm fascinated by the last entry, October 30th and 31st, the Abel Ferrara underground film Ms. 45, which, for lack of a better comparison, is a female version of Death Wish. And Abel Ferrara, of course, gave us Bad Lieutenant, and it's a very early 80s, so your favorite genre, late 70s, early 80s, but it is a grimy, dirty New York City. So. And that is their Halloween pick. So cool to them on that. So anyway, those are the October midnight movies. Last week, ladies and gentlemen, Kobe and Bianca and I and other assorted friends.
Oh, yes.
Speaking of midnight movies, I remember when we were reading the original lineup, because there were ones we expected, like The Room and then 2001. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Goldfinger was kind of cool. But there was one title that stood out because we had not heard of it. It is a 1981 nature film called Roar, and the pushing selling point was that it starred Tippi Hedren and also her daughter, a young Melanie Griffith, and the film stars and believe was directed by the gentleman who was Tippi's husband at the time,
Noel Marshall.
Noel Marshall, thank you, and it's set in Africa. The husband, wife and daughter are coming to finally visit her husband, who has been living in Africa among the animals. Dozens and dozens of lions, tigers, no bears, panthers.
Giraffes. Elephants.
Yeah, I'm thinking he is a warped Dr. Doolittle. Except he can't talk. Well, they don't talk, but he apparently can communicate with the animals. And the selling point, and I highly recommend going to the trailer. You know what? We should post a trailer on the
webpage.
We can
do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a new item on the webpage. But the selling point of the film is, and it says in the ad campaign, no animals were harmed in the making of this film. 70 humans were, including
cast and crew.
And in fact, they even have, when they have the actors' names up in a freeze frame, they say what thing happened to them. Like Melanie Griffith had to have facial reconstruction surgery.
Yep.
Because of this. One of the ads refers, I refer to it as if you mixed Grizzly Man with somebody, one of the ads referred to it as a Swiss Family Robinson snuff film. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, yeah, Swiss Family Robinson meets Grizzly Man, the great Werner Herzog documentary. And there's a lot of footage of people getting knocked down and pawed by these animals. Mm-hmm. And it was a big cinematic WTF moment there was probably about 80 people in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of astounded that nobody died and felt kind of bad for watching it, but we did. Kobe, your thoughts on Roar? It was a trip.
Yeah. Plot wise,
not a lot
going on. Acting wise, not a lot
going on.
Hard
to act when you have wild animals running around.
Yeah,
you.
Dialogue, not. It's. People were laughing in the theater, but not because it was intentionally funny, but because the lines that were in the movie are supposed to be, you know, just like normal, commonplace things like, oh, watch the lions and I'll be right back. And the guy speeds off on his motorcycle. But these are real lions.
Yes.
He left his guide with real lions and real tigers. And to me, what was cool about it was, I mean, think about making this just from a production standpoint.
Right. Apparently the film cost $16 million to make and took several years.
11 years.
11 years. That's crazy.
And it's crazy while you're watching it because you see these animals and, I don't know, maybe you're used to seeing lions and tigers and whatever in movies and stuff, but this is real. These are there's one lion that's got blood all over his face constantly.
Yeah, he is the lion nemesis.
Yeah,
there's a little subplot that doesn't really go anywhere about some hunters or some poachers that sort of show up and then they kind of go away. You're kind of waiting for the family to come to the house and then they do and they don't know how to handle it. Born Free, I was thinking Born Free meets Grizzly Man, but if you have pets at home, we have two cats. But imagine, and I'm sure Frank does this with you, the guy has enough of a relationship with some of the lions they're playful,
mm-hmm.
but they're huge. So, yeah. I mean, you know,
they are lions.
They're lions. So, because you've had Frank, and I've had Max and Curious, you know, they climb up on the chest and they kind of rub their face up against you, and, you know, cats kind of drive their skull into yours because they're little house cats.
Yeah.
Not a lion.
Not a lion.
Not a panther.
Yeah, black panthers. Races. In this thing.
Huey and Bobby. But and then there's also scenes because, you know, we've had the two cats fight and roll around on the ground.
Yep.
You see lions fighting and tigers fighting.
But again, they are lions.
Don't need to live among them.
And it's what's kind of weird too about it is that in the opening credits, the opening frames of the movie, there's this bit about, you know, no animals were harmed during the making of this film, which kind of puts you in the mood of, oh, it's a, you know, it's a nice, safe animal thing.
It's
and
a
then,
Born Free
and it's
Swiss
like,
Family
yeah,
Robinson.
There's like a,
yeah.
an underwriting thing on it, like supported by the whatever conservation society of wherever it is or something. So, you know, you're thinking it's a, you know, maybe some sort of
it's a
conservation
nature documentary.
Yeah, something like that.
And at the end, you're given these things. I mean, it's bullet points of, you know, support.
Right.
Don't go to zoos. Don't go to circuses.
Right.
Don't support people that do ivory trading.
Yes.
So that you kind of get hammered with the message.
Show your disdain for people wearing furs.
That's an actual line that's in the.
So you have all that. You have all this messaging about, you know, pro animals, pro wildlife, conservation and all this sort of thing. But the movie doesn't really have anything to do with that. They're talking about how you should support these animals and you should take care of these animals, but meanwhile they're showing humans in
great peril,
insanely dangerous situations in peril with lions and tigers,
panthers. Hey, Sebastian, did you feel bad watching it after a while?
No.
Okay. It was fun to look over. I would look over and see your lovely wife's look of just horror as this is going on. But man, it was a unique experience. I will say that there was a lot of laughter, not just because of the moments that happened. Yeah, the weird acting of you know, stay here with the lions, I'll be right back. But also the absurdity of it.
And it's not, and that's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing too. It's not just, oh, he lives with a lion and a couple times. He lives with like 30 lions.
And there's scenes of them just kind of wandering around the house.
Yeah.
And outside the house.
Pouring in and out of the doors. And yeah.
So, yeah. So I guess he has some form of communication with the lions. That's great. But I kept thinking, and as I'm watching this, I kept thinking of Timothy Treadwell, the guy in Grizzly Man, the great Werner Herzog documentary. This was a guy who spent 9 years going to the Alaskan wild and spending time amongst the foxes and the bears and the other wild animals. And he did this for 9 years, and he considered them his friends, and he was their defender. And guess how he died? He was mauled to death by one of his friends. So I think the fact that nothing happened, I think if there was a death, then it wouldn't have the same appeal.
Right.
That's
puncture wounds are okay.
Right. That's where we draw the line. Puncture wounds are okay. Death, not so much.
No.
But it was astounding to see this footage.
And that's another thing too. It's you watch this, and it's not just about Tippi Hedren and Melanie Griffith and Noel Marshall in this movie. There are camera people. There are light people. There are, you know,
sound.
There's every shot you see, and there's tigers walking by. There's a guy holding that camera, getting that shot.
Because lions can't do it. They don't have thumbs.
No, they're the lion union is terrible. You can't get them to do anything.
the Lion Screen Actors Guild, LSAG.
But I mean, there was a shot. When I forget who, I think it's one of the boys, one of Noel Marshall's boys, and this is their real family too.
Yeah,
one of Noel Marshall's kids is on this motorcycle, and there's a shot they mounted the camera to the side of the motorcycle pointing backwards.
Yep.
And there was a shot the motorcycle's driving away, and there's a tiger chasing, and it was a real cool shot. They had the camera set just right. It was real cool, and there's a tiger chasing him. And you don't, but you have to think about it. It's like, oh my God, there is a tiger chasing this motorcycle.
I guess the level of comfort that you have to have as a human being to live amongst those animals and the contact with those animals. You know, it's one thing nobody's petting a wild. You don't pet lions and tigers at the zoo.
Nope.
You just don't.
Nope.
So
they have protective things to make sure you do not do that.
And still dumb people try to. Nobody listening to this show, of course. But yeah, the mindset to be able to walk and live amongst not just one.
Nope.
Dozens.
I'm looking at I've got the trailer for Roar up on the blog at filmsociology.tumblr.com right now. And I've got it pulled up on YouTube, and it's just paused. Just on a frame in the trailer, just a random frame, and we're inside the house, and there are four lions in the house, and that's not even a fraction of them.
They tear up the couch, don't they?
They tore up everything.
Meanwhile, our cats, your cat Frank and mine, Max Curious, probably think this is the greatest film ever made.
Oh, probably.
I wish I could do that.
When's this coming on Blu-ray?
Our cats talk like that. Anyway, it is out on Blu-ray from Olive Films. So if you want, you don't take our word for it. Check it out. It's bizarre. But yeah, go to the webpage and check out the trailer. It is
something
else.
You've not seen anything like this.
Yeah, I'm really glad we went to this one. Mm-hmm. So anyway, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we will talk about what is new on DVD and Blu-ray. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
Thank you, Tyler. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci. And if you go to the Film Sociology blog
at filmsociology.tumblr.com,
you can see the trailer for the 1981 Warped Nature film Roar, which we highly recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Strange, strange picture. I'm going to break protocol. We are actually having sport. How's Tyler been in the summer league?
Don't know. Need to check on that.
Because as you know, film sociology.
I don't know if he plays in the summer league.
He should. He'd get more minutes. Film sociology is your home for Tyler Hansborough information. Anyway, talking about what's on DVD and Blu-ray. I already mentioned earlier that Ex Machina is out on DVD and Blu-ray. Really good science fiction drama. And it's a story of a young man who is brought in to observe a scientist who is creating artificial intelligence. And we find out he's created a woman for AI purposes. And how much artificial, how much intelligence does she have when it comes to emotions? And the visitor, the subject, played by Domhnall Gleeson, starts to have feelings for the AI known as Ava, played by Alicia Vikander, who we talked earlier was in Kobe's film Testament of Youth. Oscar Isaac, who, of course, we know from Inside Llewyn Davis, among others, is the scientist. Nice light-handed touch, which what on paper could be the mad scientist role. And it's a story of what do you do when you have this? How emotionally attached can you be? And it, in its own way, has this kind of odd sci-fi love triangle. And it's really well done. It's from the writer of 28 Days Later and Dread, underrated action film. And most of the film takes place inside this secluded, gorgeous movie scientist house. Just something that HGTV would just drool over. So a lot of glass and windows and open space, huge open windows. Meanwhile, the subject, the visitor, is in a glassless room, and of course Big Brother is watching constantly. So and I was going through Domhnall Gleeson, of course, was the star in About Time, which was a really smart time travel film. I'm surprised Bianca has watched that yet. But the other thing you know him from, he played Bill Weasley.
Oh, ding.
Oh yeah, that guy. He's all grown up. He's taller. Anyway, I liked it more than I thought I would. It is not a science goes awry. It's not that type of picture. So go rent that. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray, the thriller It Follows from director David Robert Mitchell, who also wrote and directed it. And it's stars Mika Monroe. Hope I'm saying that right. But it's a woman who is who's been given a supernatural force or a curse after a sexual encounter, and it at times has the feel of the 70s dumb dead teenager movies, the slasher movies, and there are homages to it, but being well aware that they're doing that. And one of the things that Ed Johnsonot, Chris Lloyd, and I, by the way, Tuesday at 1 o'clock in WFYI, you can hear us chatting on No Limits with John Krull about the year in review so far. We're at the halfway point. It's time for the Doritos halftime report. and Chris made a great point, and I wholeheartedly agree, is there is no backstory to the curse. We don't know why it's there. It's just happening. So the fact that we have teenagers who are slightly smarter than the slasher movie kids of the 70s, and trying to figure out what to do with their friend and how they're going to be able to fight this thing. And so there's not a lot of blood, Kobe. I know that's not your cup of tea, but this might be a smart thriller worth checking out. It might be bet material. So that is out. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray, oh boy. Paul Blart 2. Still blarting. Still falling down. Didn't rent it. But it's out there if you really needed another mall cop movie. There was already a second mall cop movie. It was called Observe and Report, and it's far better. Also, The Longest Ride. Will Bianca rent that one?
The Longest... Oh! Yeah, probably.
Yep. How about Jackie Brown? Nah, I gotta be in the mood. and as well, the second best exotic Marigold Hotel. Lots of aging actors we do like in a film we already saw. There's that.
Not as fun.
Judi Dench, Maggie Smith, Bill Nye.
Not the science guy.
No, not the science guy. The English character actor that you know from things like Love Actually, and he was the best part of Love Actually. Love Actually.
Yeah.
And he played Davy Jones, not the monkey, in the Pirates of the Caribbean films. And yeah, okay. That dude.
Yeah.
Welcome to that guy's segment.
I know.
You know he is. Yes. Yeah. And Richard Gere is in the second film as well. So there's that. Some old titles we're checking out, or at least of note. Beat the Devil, one of the lesser-known John Huston crime comedies with Humphrey Bogart and Gina Lola Brigida, Peter Lorre, Jennifer Jones, Robert Morley. Not our Jenny Jones. That's a different Jennifer Jones. And that's one of those. That's always one of those films that it's kind of a wink and a nod to some of the other films that Bogart had worked on in the past, like Casablanca, Maltese Falcon. It also helps that you have Peter Lorre involved and Robert Morley trying to be Sidney Greenstreet. But it was also one of those films that you used to see. It was like nobody was quite certain who owned the rights to it. It was like Night of the Living Dead and a couple other films where you would see just a bad tagged on. You know, somebody put the videotape transfer on DVD. Yeah, that's kind of a bummer. I still have a few of those. But it's anyway. So, Beat the Devil is out there. Baby, It's You, which is the one studio attempt from writer director John Sayles, with Vincent Spano and Rosanna Arquette, and it's noted because it's she's a prim and proper high school girl. He's from the other side of the tracks, and guess what? They like each other, but their worlds don't.
Aww.
But it's really well written. Good performances by the two of them. And I'm a big John Sayles fan. But the other thing that's of note, and it's set in the early 60s, it has not one, but two songs from Bruce Springsteen.
Really?
Springsteen never lets his music be used in films. He handpicks projects that they will use, that he will use his work in, or even better, do music for, like Philadelphia or... oh gosh, the film, the other John Sayles film, the Limbo, and but yeah, E Street Shuffle from The Wild, The Innocent, and E Street Shuffle, and She's the One, which has a 50s feel to it anyway. So there's that. That's out on Blu-ray. Life Stinks, the Mel Brooks film that nobody thinks about, where he's a billionaire who has to be homeless as a contest. And I always remember it because this was the film that opened the same weekend, sadly, as Terminator 2. No chance. And there are those. I have to work on that list. Because the other one I always remember was the Martin Scorsese musical with Robert De Niro and Liza Minnelli, New York, New York. Huge, big-budgeted musical. It was going to be a throwback to the musicals of the 40s and 50s. Opened the same weekend as Star Wars. Bad timing. Mm-hmm. Not good. On Criterion, you have The Black Stallion, the horse movie. With Terry, the horse movie, not Equus, the other horse movie, with Terry Garr and Mickey Rooney. Francis Ford Coppola produced that. You have Rush, not the motor, the auto racing film, the drug undercover movie with Jennifer Jason Leigh, Jason Patrick, and playing a villain, and I think it's his only time he's been on film as an actor, Greg Allman. Pretty good, too. Less is more performance from Mr. Allman. So that's out. Blown Away, the action film with Tommy Lee Jones and Jeff Bridges from 20 years ago. I always remember Blown Away because my buddy Laura and I were seeing it, and I almost got knocked out by a patron because they would not leave, even though their crying child was going on 20 minutes straight. And so as they finally got up to leave, I said, really? 20 minutes was the breaking point? Tip, ladies and gentlemen. Try not to be snarky at the movie theater. That's me saying this out there. And then finally, odd title that's out on Blu-ray, and because I didn't think this would ever see the light of day, The Legend of the Lone Ranger, which I remember seeing from 1981, and it was the creation of the character, played by Clinton Spilsbury, his one and only acting job. Film tanked. I remember seeing it in the theater with my parents, and I think people were not ready to see somebody other than Clayton Moore play the Lone Ranger. And according to legend, and I'd have to watch it again, that his Clinton's vocal tracks were dubbed over by film sociology guest James Keach, who was, of course, acting at that time, still acting. But anyway, odd film. And the fact that this, you know, this guy got a starring role in one picture and then disappeared. So might have to do some research on that. So, how are we doing on time? We doing all
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's it.
Really? We're done?
That's his only TV series and a TV movie and The Legend of the Lone Ranger, and that's it.
That's it. Yep. So, there we go. So, do we have time to go into the archives?
Yep.
We do. Okay. Well, this is the time of the show. We have not done this in a while. This is where we go into the archives and we find films that places like Warner Brothers and MGM and Sony, they're not going to put them on the shelves. You have to order them online, or as Kobe liked to say in college.
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5.
Which he never did. We don't say you should do that. And I have to give big thanks to film sociology alumni Jim Mueller, who got me this one, because he owns this, and he let me borrow it. From 1972, the Southern auto racing film Corky, starring Robert Blake as a hotshot race car driver trying to move up the ranks. Guess what? He's a Hellraiser.
Oh, no.
And he's got a little bit of Southern charm to him.
Oh, no.
And he makes bad life choices en route to trying to become one of the big race car drivers in Atlanta. He and his mechanic go from Texas to Atlanta to try to hit the big time, even though he has left his wife and their kids at home. And the wife is played by famed British actress Charlotte Rampling. And Jim pointed it out, and it's true, the accent comes and goes. And there's a couple moments where she sounds really English, which is really amusing. This was one of her first American films. And you need to Google image Charlotte Rampling. She's vintage and still around and still wonderful. Blake, and this was during a period where Blake was actually starring in films and kind of playing tough guy roles, even though I think he's shorter than me, and there's nothing wrong with that. But he did films like Electric Light and Blue, where he was a motorcycle cop. There was Busting with him and Elliot Gould. And so this was the period, and I think it was before Beretta, and it was after, obviously, In Cold Blood. But it is a downward spiral cautionary tale of bad life choices that leads to, and without giving away too much of the film, there are moments, especially in the last 10 minutes, involving Robert Blake and a gun. Makes you think. It's kind of like, you know, the bits that we've been hearing from the 1960s comedy routines of Bill Cosby talking about Spanish Fly. Little bits like that just makes you go, So anyway, glad I saw it. And that was just an interesting footnote in Blake's career, him trying to become a movie star and wound up getting even more fame on television as Beretta. You've Google imaged Ms. Rampling?
Mm-hmm. She's vintage.
She is vintage, still acting, still going strong, and you have to see her in Zardoz, which I still need to inflict on people. The John Borman film, set in the future, of course, it's one of Ed Johnson-Ott's favorite, as ours. You know, you have a beautiful Charlotte Rampling, you have Sean Connery with a ponytail and a diaper, and the gun is good, the penis is evil. That's a line from Zardoz. Don't email me. So, and my buddies Kyle and Moretta have talked about this, and we were thinking about trying to watch it in the near future at the Soci compound.
Compound.
This week I inflicted Manos, the Hands of Fate, on Kyle and Moretta.
Ah, okay.
Yes, and apparently I am now a terrible friend because I interviewed Mystery Science Theater's Mary Jo Peel
right.
about Mary Jo Fell, sorry, about and I told her I showed Manos to Emma. So I was a terrible father and a terrible human being, and now apparently I'm a terrible friend. But I made things up after Manos. I showed them The Aristocrats, which we can't talk about because we're out of time. Some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Kobe, your wife's going to be seeing a lot of them. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
We go. Good night, Four Myers. Good night, California.
Night, Michigan.